The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Okay, well, you know, we've got the perfect guest today to talk about what just happened in GDP. We also want to talk about housing in some other areas. We've got with us today Rodney Johnson. Rodney's partnered up years ago with Harry Dent. So he and Harry Dent, in my mind, are synonymous, and they are now part of Dent Research. And Rodney is truly one of the smartest guys in the room and a straightforward person we're looking forward to talking to him this morning. Good morning, Rodney.
Good morning, Mike.
Well, did it surprise you?
It surprised me. I mean, I looked at it, wait a second, and you tapped the screen thinking maybe I saw the wrong number there.
But that's a big wrong number.
It really is. And the thing that gets me about this is GDP. So we don't find out a first estimate until 30 days after the end of the quarter, which meant April for what was in January through March. And then we get a revision in May, and then we get a final revision in June. So here we are discussing, worried, and talking about something that happened 3 to 5 months ago.
Right.
And it's important, but my goodness, why can't we get better numbers sooner? In the age of the Internet, why are we still doing things on what seems to be the Pony Express?
Yeah, well, that's because it has something to do with the government. Do you think that the economy, do you think that was a one-off? In other words, is that just that one quarter? Now, obviously, it wasn't all white snowflakes that caused this. They're
right.
they're looking towards significantly. What was the number, Peggy?
In health-related spending, it fell $6.4 billion instead of rising $39.9 billion, which is what they had estimated.
So obviously, that's a different causal factor. Do you think that this next quarter, although may not be as bad, is this a trend that we're in now?
I don't think it's a trend. The number on the personal consumption side, as Peggy noted, was off dramatically from what the government had first reported. It was still positive. I believe it was 1.5% growth in personal consumption. Inventories fell just through the floor. And so that's a big pull on this number is inventory change, which does have a lot to do with the weather, but not everything. I mean, as people have noted, it snows every winter. We're kind of aware that winter does happen. And so it was expected that we would have some slowdown, but not like that. But I don't think that we're going to get a trend from the first quarter number to a lower second quarter number, meaning a negative. That would be off the charts. We've seen some things come back in terms of a little inventory build. We've seen some manufacturing numbers on the positive side with capacity utilization and other things. And as you noted, kind of at the top of the segment, housing has had something of a rebound in here. We don't think it's that significant or a trend, but there is something to that. And so we do think that we're going to have a positive second quarter. What this really does is it makes the whole year pretty darn suspect. I mean, we've been given a sunshine and roses look at things every year for the past 4 to 5 years as to how it's going to be better. And it just doesn't seem to kick into high gear. Even if we grew 3% a quarter for the next three quarters, second, third, and fourth quarter, it would still mean the whole year was only 1.5%. And that's pretty measly low.
Rodney, actually, the economists are predicting that for the second quarter that we're going to see 3.6% growth, and they think that's going to just maintain for the whole rest of the year.
But it would
still put you under 2% for the whole year, and that's with... I mean, we've got to keep in mind, that's with our Federal Reserve printing billions of dollars a month. The best we can do is sub 2% growth. That's terrible.
I know. And every year they seem to come out very optimistic. And then every year, about mid-year, actually, they start adjusting their forecast because for the last several years, they've missed it each and every year. Why is that?
Well, it's the same old thing. You know, there's an estimate that, and it's usually a government estimate, so let's start with who's giving us these numbers to say, look, we've put these things in place. We have lower interest rates, which means people can borrow more if they choose to, so they can purchase more, so we can grow the economy. And they say, so when people start borrowing at a much higher pace, this is going to kick off. And it just doesn't occur. The biggest borrowing always comes in housing because it's when you put down the lowest amount of money for the largest purchase, and we just have not seen housing rebound like the government would want it to happen. And they want it for a number of reasons, and they're all good reasons. And they want people to move forward in their personal lives. They want employment to pick up, so you want to build a lot of new homes because it puts contractors and construction workers back to work. So nothing wrong with why you want it. It's just you have to look at the facts on the ground. People aren't buying like they used to. People have different living arrangements. We have multi-generational homes. Not as many people qualify for loans. All sorts of things are going to hold this back. And when you look on the credit card side, our revolving credit purchasing is still down dramatically. We peaked at about $900 billion in credit card debt back in 2008. We're at about $670 billion right now, and it's staying even. We're just not growing it because we don't spend like we used to.
So now you've at Dent Research, you seem to have been suspect of the housing numbers anyway for a long time, haven't you? And in other words, there so much was put on housing and the big recovery. You guys down there haven't looked at it quite the same way.
We haven't. We've been on the conservative side of these numbers for years because part of it is that the recent history is what everybody wants to have happen. We were building over 1.5 million new homes a year, and now we're at 500,000. And that's the big surprise happy number from yesterday. And so it's like, well, wait a second, you know, do we really think we're going to get back to this million and change number of years? A million change number of homes per year? That doesn't really make sense. That was an aberration. That was a bubble. And so the long-term average is a lower number, and we're even below that because we had this huge group of the boomers go through the economy. They pushed up the buying of homes, and now we have smaller groups behind them. So in our world, just numerically, there aren't enough people out there to push the demand for housing. And then you start chipping away at the other pieces of this, like the creditworthiness of the borrowers who are going to buy the homes. After the downturn, we looked around as a banking system and said, gee, maybe we shouldn't lend people money with no money down and all sorts of crazy standards or lack of standards. And so we tightened it up, and so fewer people qualify. Now we have fewer people with rising incomes, and we have a lot of people with student loan debt, and so they don't qualify to buy the homes, and that shrinks the pool even more. So we've been very suspect of housing, and we remain on that. We think the past month was basically an aberration. We think the long-term trend is much, much more conservative.
Okay. And so, now, in fact, you hear a lot more about demographics now. Now, I'd never heard of demographics until I ran into you and Harry in the early 90s. But you hear a lot more about demographics, but it doesn't seem to be playing out the way it should be. Is that because of the Fed stimulus? Because it seems right now that we're in between generations. You've got the baby boomers retiring at some 10,000 plus a day. It would seem to be like our economy would be slowing down a lot more than it is. And so it looks like the Fed, with their stimulus, has kind of stepped into the breach and said, okay, you know, the economy would slow down, the market would slow down. We're not going to let that happen. We're going to continue to stimulate. Is that true? And if so, what's going to happen now that the quantitative easing is being reduced?
Well, I'll tell you, Mike, I think demographics are playing a huge part in the economy right now. And I would ask that if people did not see the stock market at highs, if you didn't see the equity markets at, you know, almost 2,000 on the S&P and almost 17,000 on the Dow, would you then look at the rest of everything going on and say, wow, this feels pretty good? And I would imagine most people would say no. Now, sitting in Houston, you might, because, of course, you have energy and some different things going on. But around the country, it's still very difficult, and people aren't getting raises because we do have that slack in the economy and so many workers looking for jobs. And so in our world, we do think that demographics are slowing things down. And it's not as much the printing of the money as it is the very, very low interest rates that are trying to keep things going right now.
All right. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back on the other side of the break, folks. We've got Rodney Johnson with us today, folks, of Dent Research. We'll be back to you in just a few moments. You're listening to Straight Talk Money with Mike Robertson. Peggy and I and Rodney will be back in just a moment. Stay with us.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Rodney is, by the way, still president of HS Dent. I was asking about that during the break. He's president of HS Dent, and he's part of the Dent Research team. In my mind, folks, Rodney and Harry are synonymous. The two of them had been together, I guess, what, Rodney, 20 years now or more?
17, so really 17, close.
Okay, pretty close. All right. So, and Rodney is truly one of the smartest guys in the room. And if you ever get a chance to hear him, you really should. Now, we're gonna do a little commercial now because he's got a service that's free. And then they've got a conference coming up that I'm going to this fall called the Irrational Economic Conference, which I highly recommend you attend. It's in Miami. Rodney, why don't you tell them about that and tell them about the free daily letter that you guys publish.
Sure. The free daily letter is called Economy and Markets. It used to be called Survive and Prosper. We changed the name to more fit what we do. And it's called Economy and Markets. People can find it by going to harrydent.com. On the internet. So it's very simple, harrydent.com. The conference in November, which we put in Miami Beach, because who wouldn't want to be in Miami in November, we call the Irrational Economics Summit. And we're trying to get at the point about things seem to be irrational in the economy, but they actually do make sense if you look at some of the underlying trends like demographics. And our headliner this year, certainly Harry and I are going to be speaking in general session a couple of times. We also have David Stockman, who's going to be speaking as well. And so it should be a great conference with a lot of good information. And that information is also available at harrydent.com.
Yeah, I highly recommend it, folks. You can go down with me. We'll be down there. I'm looking forward to it. So anyway, go to harrydent.com. Sign up for Economy and Markets, and you'll really get a lot out of it. All right, let's go. Let's talk about this. Rodney, market opened up this morning. It was in the red, and then all these numbers came out. Once they digested it, seems to me like that they like it, because this means that we won't see a rise in rates for a little while longer. It looks like, because Janet Yellen was saying a little earlier, she thought maybe next year. Are you thinking that this has moved out now?
Yeah, for years I've been telling people 2017. That's when you can expect rates to make any interesting move higher. Maybe, 25, 50 basis points on the short end from zero, but not above 1% for a number of years. And this is what people in the market are looking at. Individual investors, myself included, interest rates are not changing what I'm buying in the marketplace for my portfolio. But large institutions borrow money to invest. And if they can borrow money at near zero, it's a lot better than borrowing money at 3/4 or 1%. And so the notion that interest rates will remain low for an even longer period of time based on the data like the GDP this morning means they have more time to make those bigger investments, and that pushes equities higher. And so that's why you get into this weird, weird scenario where bad news equals good news. It's not that people are looking at it wrong. They're just doing the math and saying, well, I can borrow money near zero and keep investing. Let's just keep pushing it higher.
So does that mean that we're still going to maintain what's called a TINA market? There is no other alternative? Because it seems like so much has come into the stock market. Now, admittedly, the statistics keep saying that that the only 52% of the investing public are actually participating in this market. But it seems like the market continues to climb higher because there's no place else for it to go. What do you guys think is going to happen to the stock market? Because I think, now, I know that you differ a little bit from Harry from time to time, but Harry, for instance, has been looking for a significant pullback in this market, really coming up the latter part of this year. Is that still on track for Harry? And if so, what do you think?
It is. Harry's been forecasting a drop that could be 15 to 20% here that could start really any time. And he sees then the market coming back towards the end of the year and then having a much bigger drop somewhere in the 2015-2016 range. I don't get into forecasting how far it will fall. I definitely think we're headed for some turbulent times. I think the middle of the summer could be rocky. If we don't get significant growth coming out of the second quarter, if we don't have this this whole mindset of, well, the first quarter really was an aberration, so everything's roses now, I think people are going to start to get nervous, particularly because we're at these highs. You see people starting to protect their positions, specifically large institutions, as we get into the very normally turbulent months of August and September. And so it would just be smart to take money off the table, put on a hedge, otherwise kind of step away a little bit and protect some of your gains and your money as we get into the difficult months. I think that's possible and likely. As far as this being no alternative, Yeah, there's something to that. What are you going to do instead? You're going to buy a high-yield bond at 5%? I mean, at that point, it's not high yield. It's just high stupidity. It doesn't help you at all at 5% if somewhere in the next few years interest rates are going to move higher and take a lot of that yield away and you have the risk of the company. And so there's just not a lot of good places for people to go to protect and grow their wealth, and so they end up in the stock market. And I don't know anybody who's happy about it, Mike. I know very few people who say, oh, this is okay, it's growing. Most people I know are in it very begrudgingly. And you know what? I'm with them.
Yeah, I am too. In fact, I saw a note this morning where somebody said this is the best unhappy market that's they've ever seen. And so, but all right. So looking at the market, are there areas that you like though? All right, are there areas that you know, if we do get the slowdown, because it looks to me like the economy is just meandering along, and we are, it should have a minimal impact, I guess, when the QE is finished. But are there segments that they're like? Is there anything that you like overseas? And what do you think of China? Because I know that's another area that Dent Research has been looking at and expecting perhaps a real estate bubble there.
The real estate bubble happened, and it's actually starting to deflate. We saw prices fall off last month, which is the first time in a long time that the national government actually printed that prices were falling. There have been a lot of private estimates of it, but the government would never admit it. Once you have that turn in assets from anything that's overly leveraged, which, of course, property is in China, then you have new investors step away. And that becomes the issue. It becomes a vicious cycle instead of a virtuous cycle because you don't have that new buyer pushing prices higher. And so we think that the rollovers already happened in China, and it will be very, very difficult over there, which is leading to a drop in a lot of commodities that were based on exporting to China. That's why you see copper dropping again and some other things. And so that to us is a big warning sign, and it's why, to go into your second point, we're not looking as much at emerging markets, which tend to focus on exporting natural resources, because the big buyer, of course, was China. And so if they're slowing down, you don't want to be standing in the line of fire as these exports of resources drop and these emerging markets fall away. Which brings us back to the U.S. We're still a fan of healthcare. I like healthcare in particular. I still like the biotechs. We kind of got overblown last year, and things ran up, and then we had a pullback of some sort. But there's no way to look at the Affordable Care Act and the other things going on in healthcare and say we're not going to have a dramatic increase in the use of pharmaceuticals. It's just happening. And there was an article, I guess, yesterday, this morning, about how more of the people who are on the Affordable Care Act plans are sicker. It's like, well, of course they are. You know, they needed a plan, and they needed an affordable one. This one showed up, and they bought it. And so that speaks to the greater use of healthcare, and so that's a sector we like. We also like technology. We think there was also a pullback there. Apple and a few other companies, of course, Apple's rebounded leading up to their split. But we think technology is also a good place to be, particularly if we get a general slowdown in the market.
Okay. Rodney, can you stay with us just a few more minutes?
Sure.
I have another couple of questions to ask you, if you would, please. So, folks, we've got Rodney Johnson with us today of HS Dent and Dent Research. And we're talking about the markets and how do you figure this out? Because things are changing, but not that much. It looks like we're pretty much in a zone. So let's see how long we stay that way. Stay with us. We'll be back to you in just a few moments.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We've had a great show today. We've got with us Rodney Johnson. Rodney is president of HS Dent and a member of the Dent Research Team. And, Rodney, I just want to ask you just a couple more questions because I know one of Harry's big thing has been over the years deflation. And there have been a few people out there, Lacey Hunt. I can't remember the other one. We had another gentleman on that felt the same way. I went out to the Money Show with Peggy not long ago. We interviewed mm-hmm. several people, but we started out with Dr. Gary Schilling, who's got a big following and is well-read. Dr. Schilling made a really good case for deflation. He agrees with Harry. And I ended up, oddly enough, with Dr. Mark Skousen, who also is a bright man, but he made the case for inflation. Where do you stand on it? Are we going to have – is the porridge too hot? Is the porridge too cold? I can't figure it out.
Well, I'm right there with you. The short answer is you're going to get both. The long answer is you never get exactly what you want out of such conversations because it's bumpy. Deflation, meaning a general decline in prices across the board. It also means, which people forget, a general decline in weight, very, very difficult to deal with in life. Inflation, of course, is a general rise in prices and rising wages. We don't get either one of these in a nice, simple form. If you look across the landscape of things you buy, you can get much bigger televisions for cheaper prices. You can get faster computers for cheaper prices. Laptops have almost become throwaways now. That is very deflationary in the world of productivity. You don't buy a laptop every day, but prices have gone down. Services have gone down, or more likely in a lot of instances, they haven't gone up. What you pay your housekeeper is probably the same that you paid 5 years ago, even though inflation has kind of creeped up in some different areas. Food and energy are the two that we see every day that we say, hey, wait a second, I'm going to grill some steaks, and I think I'm paying 25% more than I was 6 months ago. How in the world can we not have inflation? When we're dealing with food and energy, we're dealing with things that are traded on the global market, and they're very susceptible to supply disruptions. The drought in North Texas that stretches up into Oklahoma and then in parts of California has been devastating to ranchers. And so we have seen a lot of beef prices rise dramatically. The pork disease, porcine, whatever it is, has devastated a lot of the pig farmers. And so you have seen that cause some price disruptions. And then you get what's going on in the Middle East affecting energy, which is exceptionally high anyway. And so you get this mismatch of different goods and services and what's going on with them. Some inflation, if you're fighting with things with disrupted supply on a world market, but in general, deflation, and specifically because we're using less credit. And that's kind of what Schilling usually talks about and we talk about. As we pay back debt, it actually kind of contracts the economy a little bit, and that's the deflationary piece we always look at, although we do recognize these other things are going on with food and energy.
Okay, so we're going to get a little bit of both.
Unfortunately, yes. The things you buy at the store are probably going to go up a little bit in price, but in general, we're going to have a bit deflationary push on the economy, which serves to keep wages flat and low. That's the hard part of this.
All right. Then my next question is, do you see anything out there that's going to cause this market to have a significant pullback? Because there are folks out there who still believe that we could go back and hit those numbers that we saw in the spring of 2009. There are others. Obviously, we have not had a significant pullback now for so long. We don't remember what one is like. Volatility until recently has been minuscule. I think we went 30-some-odd days with less than 1% one direction or another. It's just things like the seas are very calm. Last question, is there anything that you see that changes that? And if so, what is your thoughts about how deep this could go once we do get a real correction?
There are a couple of things that could do. Certainly a rollover in China of dramatic proportion. If their economy started shrinking or growing at less than 5%, which would be an absolute catastrophe for them, that would ripple around the world because they do buy a lot of things from us. We do export a lot over there. If we saw the European Union have another disruption in their currency, which I think is very likely because the Greeks are not out of the woods by any stretch of the imagination, that would also come back to our shores. And here in the United States, if we don't get people spending money, certainly people in the 25 to 35-year-old range, moving into their normal spending patterns, raising kids and doing the things they do, we could have a severe disruption here. So China first, Europe later. Here in the United States, it's more of a long-term thing of how people are spending money that could be a problem for the markets.
But right now, I guess you still agree there is no other alternative, and so it seems to be the, I guess, the investment of choice only by default. It seems like the market is a default investment right now for most people.
It is, and it's a short stop market. I want to keep the stops on my investments quite short and quite close because I don't like it. I see that there are very few alternatives for making money and growing your position, but I also recognize that, you know, with stock buybacks and other things that are kind of driving this market, it's not because we're growing so much, it's because of these outside factors. And so it doesn't give me a lot of confidence that we're on solid footing.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess let's just see what's going to happen. Interesting times that we're living in, isn't it, Rodney?
Yes, the old Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times. And yes, yeah, we do.
We are. Well, listen, thank you so much for being with us today. Really, really appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you at the Irrational Economic Conference in Miami this fall.
I'll see you there, Mike.
All right. Thanks, Rodney. Thank you. And once again, folks, I highly recommend if you are serious about investing, you consider attending the conference. We had one last year out in California. There were hundreds and hundreds of investors there. The conferences like these are the kind of things I think you need to attend, not just ones where people are selling newsletters and things like that. I think you need to attend some real serious, these are real serious economists that come to this conference. Remember, Lacey Hunt made the big comment last year about Ben Bernanke, and we had him on. Really interesting how Bernanke looked at things, and he was right on target. So that will be this fall. But go to harrydent.com and pick up Economy and Markets. It's absolutely free. It's daily. Some of them are better than others, I'll tell you right off the top. Some of them are really, really good, really eye-opening, some good things to think about. In other words, it's hard to be wonderful every day, right? And so, in some days, not a lot goes on, but it's worth having. I read it every day, and it's worthwhile. And Rodney is just a very, very bright guy and very straightforward. And so, obviously, folks, we are in interesting times. We are in times that really they don't teach in graduate school. We'll just see what's happened. I was glad to hear Rodney say that, the Chinese real estate bubble the air was getting let out, because that was one of the dangers. We talk about event risk, the type of things that could blow up our economy up here and blow up our stock market. If that eases its way out of that difficulty without causing too severe of a problem, maybe just a ripple instead of a tsunami, that will help us here. We could keep going on for quite a while, but as Rodney says, maybe you want to keep your stop losses, keep your frame of reference in the market a little narrower than normal, all right? Because when this thing turns, it could get a lot of momentum really, really fast, because it's been so long since we've had pullbacks, and the underpinnings of this economy and the underpinnings of this market are not necessarily that strong. You've seen that with GDP this morning. We'll be interested to see what happens in the next quarter of GDP. But good guest.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.